Richard Schickel spent much of his childhood in the movie palaces of Wauwatosa, a middle-class suburb of Milwaukee. It was the 1940s, and World War II was raging far away in Europe, but the movies brought it home. Schickel went on to become a respected movie critic for Time magazine and the author of dozens of books on Hollywood and its stars. NPR's Renee Montagne spoke with him about a love of movies that began with war movies.
The title of Richard Schickel's memoir is taken from a World War I novelty tune his father used to sing to him. "Good morning, Mr. Zip, Zip, Zip," it's called. The song continues chirpily, "With your hair cut just as short as mine," a reference to a military shave. Richard Schickel had barely started going to the movies when, he writes, the bombs suddenly rained down on Pearl Harbor. And for the rest of his childhood, Wauwatosa would be the home front.
What we were seeing were, for combat movies, it might be something like Gung Ho or Bataan. There were lots of movies that were not directly about the war, but often metaphorically were about the war. You know, Lassie Come Home is a war movie. It's about a lost dog who makes her way home through about 1,000 miles of very rough country full of very rough people.
But it's also the story of a people, as strong and enduring in peace as they are in war.
You're my lassie, come home.
Implicit promise of a movie like that is, yes, they will come home. Or if they don't come home, let's say it's something like A Guy Named Joe, a movie in which Spencer Tracy dies, goes to pilot heaven, but comes back as, you know, Casper the Friendly Ghost, guiding his friends and his former girlfriend through difficult aerial combat to victory.
Well, here we go. I'm against my better judgment. You can't see me or hear me, but they tell me I can get through to you. Personally, I doubt it. No, no, no. Don't hug the ground. Give me the gun. Relax. You got nothing to worry about. Remember, with all that cash, you got a lot to live for.
I mean, again, there was no implication necessarily that death was final.
You're right that for grown-ups, the war was tragedy, or it might have even been opportunity, or
sure,
inconvenience, maybe.
It was all those things.
Right, but and in quoting you say, but I was 8 years old when Pearl Harbor was attacked, and 12 years old when Hiroshima was bombed. And for me, the war was the most wondrous alternative reality ever invented.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, it was, if I look back on myself looking at that war at that time, it seemed to me like a great epic movie going on out there, which had, you know, for a little kid, no consequences. I had no siblings who were in the service. Our little life went on its even way. Wartime impositions on someone like me were bundling up the newspapers for the scrap drive or keeping a ball of tinfoil that we eventually turned in for recycling. It was kind of made to seem, for civilians, a dutiful adventure.
For a memoir about a film critic,
mm-hmm,
it's startling, actually, that the first words that a reader sees in your book are the words prologue,
uh-huh,
wartime lies.
Well, I think that's one of the main themes of the book, which is that, in particular in wartime, your government lies to you under the guise of morale building. And as I re-encountered these movies to write the book, I was struck by the fact that they are so often lying. And they're in particular lying about death. You know, World War II cost worldwide a minimum of 50 million people dead. And yet, you know, somehow those figures never got totaled up for us, whatever representations of death there were in the media, and particularly in the movies, were heroic. I mean, nobody died stupidly or in vain. But, you know, most people in war die absurdly because they're standing in the wrong place. So I'm not in any way saying that this was an unjust war or anything, but I am saying that the media particularly blinked about that. It certainly blinked about the Holocaust.
The movies that were made during the war would not necessarily have had access to the details of the Holocaust.
Yeah, I think people did have access to it. I think our government had access to it. Listen, Ben Hecht had access to it. He was a screenwriter, and he was putting pageants on all over the country, in New York at Madison Square Garden and Hollywood at the Hollywood Bowl. And it was a pageant about the death of European Jewry in these camps. So, yeah, they chose not to talk about that.
Was there a quintessential film
of the war?
Of the war. Well, that when you were a child.
Sure, you know what it is. It's Casablanca. Every imaginable cliche of romantic, rueful movies is encompassed in this one single movie.
When I said I would never leave you.
And you never will. But I've got a job to do, too. Where I'm going, you can't follow. What I've got to do, you can't be any part of. Ilse, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world.
It doesn't miss a beat. You know, the heroic Paul Henreid character, the cynic like of the Humphrey Bogart character, who comes to understand the larger war aims, the dithering romantic woman, the cynical officer, the evil officer, you know, represented by German Major Strasser. And I think you'd have to say this, every almost good impulse that carried us through the war is somehow encompassed in Casablanca. And also, it's extremely well written with a lot of snappy, cynical dialogue that many people, even far younger than I, can quote happily. So it's the movie that sort of summarized the best of our war aims, I think.
Movie critic Richard Schickel's new memoir is titled Good Morning, Mr. Zip, 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 Movies, Memory, and World War II. I'm Renee Montaigne, NPR News, Los Angeles.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.